Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. This is our first attempt to live stream with both audio and video as part of the message of Yada Yada, which means to know Yahweh, in the 10 years that we have done this program. So we are still learning in the learning curve as it relates to the video quality and the sound quality, as well as in the future, we'll have multiple co-hosts that are part of this program. But this evening, this is our first venture away from Blog Talk Radio, where we have produced a live audio stream for a better part of 10 years now. And during that time, we have shared what we have learned about Yahweh, the Creator God of the universe, who we have translated his message to mankind out of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And the result has been 35 books, all of which sit on the bookshelves of yadayah.com. And this program is designed to not only direct your attention to the bookshelf at yadayah.com, where all 35 books are available in their entirety, absolutely free. So we're not trying to sell you anything. There's not even a donate to us button on the site. All we want is your attention so that you come to know the Creator God of the universe, Yahweh. We're going to pick up this program where we left off just now 2 weeks ago. And that was a transition back in time to understand the future. It is the way that Yahweh communicates to us quite often, using a past event to predict one that will transpire, sometimes millennia later. A great example would be when Abraham and Yitzhak ventured under Yahweh's instruction to the temple mount, to the summit of Mount Moriah, long before it was prepared by Dodd to house the first temple, the house for Yahweh's name. And there they conducted with Yahweh a dress rehearsal for Pesach, where then 2,000 years thereafter, Dodd, serving as the Pesach Gael, was the Son of God fulfilling that mission. And so in exactly the same place, on exactly the same time of year, just 40 yobel separating these events, we find the confirmation of the Torah and then the enactment of the Moed Mikre, the invitations to meet with God and to understand his restoring witness, fulfilled in exactly the same place. Well, there is another dress rehearsal for an important event that has not yet transpired in our future. That is the sacrifice of the red heifer. Now, it's going to occur on Teruah in year 6000 Yah. That's 2033. The harvest of Teruah, which is called a lakat, gleaning, will transpire on the evening of Teruah, which is September 23rd, 2033. And then on Yom Teruah, the following day, which is still the Shabbat, still part of Yom Teruah, the sacrifice of the red heifer will occur. And it will be to do exactly the same thing as had occurred 2 millennia, 888 years prior to this date, when the great orator and prophet Elia rid Israel of the prophets and the religious clerics that were advancing the agenda of Asherah and Baal at the behest of the king and queen of Israel. This was an integration of politics and religion into a milieu that sickened the country, and Elia was the lone voice that spoke against them. And it was the very scene, the nature of the animal being sacrificed, the people that were being denounced, even the master of ceremonies, that will all repeat themselves here at the end of the time of Jacob's troubles, just 10 days before Yahweh's return, when the red heifer is sacrificed to cleanse and prepare Yisrael for Yahweh's return with Dod on Yom Kippurim. So what I'd like to do this evening is we're going to share insights that I have gleaned from translating what Eliyahu said and combine that into a narrative that helps us understand better the specific role of the red heifer in preparing Israel, who is presented in the same book within the Torah and Numbers, in Numbers 5, in the case of the adulterous woman, who is prepared once again to engage in a relationship with Yahweh. And so that is the intent of today's program. And what's interesting is we go back in time to the period of King Ahab and Queen Isabel. Ahab means father of the brethren, and Isabel means worship the Lord. Bel, the Hebrew word for Lord, is the title that Yahweh ascribed Satan. So it is certainly a negative thing by any estimation. And Isabel had come from what is today Lebanon. She was rotten to the core. She was exceedingly religious, and she convinced her very wayward and immoral husband to establish the worship of Asherah, which is the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God, the Madonna and Child, the consort of Baal, the Lord in the pagan religions of the Canaanites, of the Phoenicians, the Punic people. This also occurred in Babylon with Assyria. In fact, Assyria was actually named after the pagan goddess. And today, Orthodox and Catholic Christians celebrate this same goddess under the name Mary, which means contentious in Hebrew, as if she were blessed, which is the meaning of Asherah in Asher in Hebrew. And venerate her as the Mother of God, the Queen of Heaven, and the Madonna and Child, which is exactly the same role that Asherah played in these ancient pagan religions. So the story begins in Malachim, 1 Kings 16:30, and there we read, "And Ahab did that which was evil in the sight of Yahweh, worse than all who were before him." Now that's saying something, because Israel had a propensity to be exceedingly religious, things that God finds abhorrent. The commentary continues in the next verse with, "And it came to be, as if it were a trivial thing to him, to walk in the offensive religiosity of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, such that he took Isabel, worships the Lord," translated as Jezebel, "to be his woman and wife, the daughter of Ethbaal, with the Lord, Baal, king of Sidon, the hunters. And they walked with and engaged on behalf of Baal, the Lord. They bowed down, prostrating themselves in worship to him." In this statement, you immediately confront the realization that the Lord wants people to worship him. The Lord wants to control and to possess people. The Lord wants to lord over individuals. This is the opposite of what Yahweh wants to achieve. He doesn't want anyone bowing down to him. He doesn't want anyone worshiping him. He instead wants to lift us up to be his children. Well, Baal, who is also known as Satan, is the god of religion. "He erected an altar to Baal, the Lord, in Beeth Baal, the house of the Lord, which he built in Shamarom, Samaria." Malachim Kings 16:32. "And when Ahab, father of the brethren, engaged with Asherah, the Canaanite goddess of fortuitous relationships, Ahab, father of the brethren, did more to antagonize and provoke as well as grieve Yahweh, Almighty God, the God of Israel, and all of the kings of Israel who came before him. So, the lesson here is, if your goal is to aggravate God, which does not seem like a very good idea to me, then you want to worship a pagan god. You want to bow down before the Lord. You want to build religious monstrosities. If you act in a religious way, you are sure to antagonize, provoke, and grieve Yahweh. But what's the point? Why would anyone want to do that? Well, they did. And billions do even to this day. Well, I guess it was a record of sorts, but not one that we should aspire to. Nevertheless, overtly political and religious, Jews remain in competition with Ahab. To stem the rising tide of malevolence, Elia, which means Yahweh's God, spoke out against the corrupt religious leadership in Israel. With words, he brought a drought upon the land, such that the waters of Meribah, the contentiousness, would run dry. All the while, Queen Isabel, worships the Lord, was doing what the religious do best. She was silencing those who speak for God, and doing so as a service to her Lord, Satan. Then, following the queen's murderous spree, there was a showdown at the western end of the Jezreel Valley near Mount Carmel. The ensuing episode is the most entertaining throughout the prophets, and it served to prepare Elia for what he will soon orchestrate when he returns and presides over the sacrifice of the red heifer on Teruah. Now, the great debate between Elia and the 850 prophets of the Lord, these religious clerics, who also spoke for the mother of God, Asherah, is presented in Malachim, which means Kings, 1:18. It reveals that Yahweh's prophet was fully aware of the claims that the Canaanites in particular had made in favor of their gods. The Lord, Ha-Baal, as a storm god, was shown to be impotent by Elia when he couldn't so much as ignite a fire, this one beneath the altar, by using his main symbol, a lightning bolt. And Asherah, as the goddess of fortuitous relationships, she was shown otherwise, when the fortunes of her prophets took a turn from the worse and, well, they were killed. Further, the prince of the air, as Baal was known, couldn't even cause it to rain. And so it was Yahweh who stole his thunder, so to speak, to drench the altar. So the day begins with Yahweh asking Elia to present himself to Ahab, very much like Yada will be asked to confront the corporeal manifestation of Hasatan on Teruah. It is part of this story that I hope resonates with everyone, that Yahweh has chosen not to work alone. He always works through people. And the people he chooses sometimes are quite different than those in political or religious positions would have selected. You know, for example, when he wanted to free his people from Mitzrayim, Egypt, God could have blown them to smithereens. He could have turned all of Egypt to glass. But he didn't. He could have blown Pharaoh out of his palatial palace and eliminated his army. But that's not Yahweh's style. He doesn't show off. And since he created us to engage in a covenant relationship with us, God's style is to work through the very people he wants to have be part of his family. And so Yahweh chose a broken down, old, 80-year-old, matter of fact, shepherd who was off tending sheep in Arabia, the base of Mount Chorib, to call his people home. In this case, Yahweh chose a man whose preference was to wear goat hair clothing, who lived out away from the population centers, who had disengaged from both religion and politics to share Yahweh's message. And he chose a man who was acerbic, sarcastic, for those that don't like the biting nature of sarcasm. No, you're not going to like Elia very much, because he was exceedingly refined when it came to the art of sarcastic humor. And it is something that Yahweh obviously enjoys, because Elia is the one prophet that he is asking to return and to herald his message once again as one of the two last witnesses. So as we read, it came to pass after the passage of many days that the word of Yahweh came to be with Elia in the third year, saying, go and see Akab, and I will send rain on the Adamah, on the ground. So Elia went to see Ahab when there was a formidable famine in Samaria. Then Ahab called out to Obadiah, who was over the house, and Obadiah had come to respect Yahweh tremendously. So it came to be that while Isabel cut off and demeaned the prophets of Yahweh, that Obadiah took 100 who spoke for God and hid them, some 50 individuals, in a cave. And he had nourished them with bread and water. Malachim, 1 Kings 18:4. So Obadiah was an interesting fellow, and that even though he worked for a horrible king, he also worked to protect and serve Yahweh's family. And he was someone that Elia knew. So while Obadiah works with Yah, which is what it means, it's from Obed and Yah, which means Obed means to work, and obviously Yah is the familiar form of Yahweh's name, was out running an errand, looking for water, and as Obadiah was on the road, he was met abruptly by Elia. Nachar, while being somewhat foreign, by being observant, he thought he recognized him and fell on his face, and he said, is this you, Elia, my upright one? He answered him and said, yes, it is me. So go tell your Lord that you have seen Elia. Elia said, as Yahweh of hosts lives, whom I stand before today, I will surely see him. It was a rendezvous. Yahweh wanted this debate to occur. And this same rendezvous will occur on Teruah in year 6000 Yah, 2033. Happens to be a Shabbat of September 24th, when I, as Yada, will call the corporeal manifestation of Satan for the final rendezvous. It was essential to make the point that Yahweh was sending Elia to meet with the devil, because on the morning of Teruah, as I've shared, on 6000 Yah, exactly 2,888 years after this encounter, God will send his messenger Yada to confront Satan. Now, as the debate proceeds, we witness the oldest political trick in the book. Politicians project their flaws and vulnerabilities on their opponents. They do so in hoping that they will confuse the audience by deflecting criticism away from themselves, all while muddying the waters by slandering their rivals. And so, Obadiah, works with Yahweh, walked to meet Ahab, and he informed him. Then Ahab walked to meet Elia. It was as it will be. Although next time Elia will be summoning Satan to meet with Yada, He, as the Adama Parah, the red heifer, also means the man of the earth who is productive. Adama means red, earth, and man. It is put in the feminine ending, as is Parah. Parah is par as a bull with an ah. It is made into a heifer. But Parah also means productive and fruitful. And Adam is the name of the first man. Adam and Adama speak of the earth and speak of that which is red, bloody red in this case. Now, the Adama Parah will offer his life to prepare the remnant of Yisrael to reestablish their relationship with Yahweh after 3,480 years of estrangement. When the corporal manifestation of HaSatan walks up to Yahweh's Choder, on the southern end of the Temple Mount, overlooking the city of Dod, just 9 years from now, he will say this very thing, projecting what he has done to trouble Yisrael and onto the one who was there to save God's people. And it came about when Ahab saw Elijah, that Ahab, woeful father of the brethren, said to him, "Is this you, troubler, who causes chaos while confusing, anguishing, and disassociating Yisrael?" Again, what he said was not only the opposite of what was true for Elijah, but was completely true for him. Well, Satan likes to confuse by disparaging Yahweh and his prophets and his witnesses. His accusations reflect his own failings. In this way, the adversary possessed Paul. He also possessed Muhammad to create the menacing religions of Christianity and Islam. I'm not speaking out of school here. Both admitted that they were demon-possessed. Nevertheless, humanity has long favored deception and oppression, particularly over the truth. The history of civilization is the story of religious and political control leading to war and the plundering and enslaving of others. Anyway, on this day, Elijah knew what to say against the political and religious leadership of Israel. This is Malachim 1 Kings 18:18. And he answered, "It is not I who has troubled, confused, or estranged Israel, but you and your father's household by neglecting, rejecting, and abandoning the instructive conditions pursuant to the relationship with Yahweh. You have followed after the Lord's, as have almost all religious people today." I call it the Babel effect. Tidbits of truth commingled with prolific lies to facilitate the integration of politics and religion. This is Yahweh's frustration with Babylon. That's why he calls his people out of Babylon, even in the end. But it is Satan's stock in trade. So now, send for assembling together unto me all Yisrael to Har HaCarmel, the Mount of the Garden, along with the 450 prophets of Baal, the Lord, and the 400 prophets of Asherah, beneficial relationships. Whatever Yahweh establishes, Satan counterfeits. Invite and summon all who eat at Jezebel's, worship the Lord Jezebel's table. You see, false gods are nurtured and feast upon the tables of religious and political despots. Ahab and Jezebel were prime examples of institutionalized evil. Now, the question that Elijah poses and answers at the conclusion of his presentation should be plastered on every door, every home, every synagogue and church world over. For this alone, we have been rewarded for having delved into the great showdown between the Lord and his adversary, which in this case is none other than the creator God of the universe, Yahweh. And when Ahab reached out to all of the children of Israel and assembled the prophets on Har HaCarmel, the Mount of the Garden, then Eliah approached and presented himself to all of the people. Before we read on, think about this for a moment. This king was so full of himself that when he was asked by what at the time was a hermit among prophets, a man who had no political influence at all. And this is a man that he wanted to kill. And yet this man said, summon Israel, we'll have a debate. Bring in all of your prophets, all of the prophets and the clerics that speak on behalf of the Lord Baal and of the Queen of Heaven. And we'll have a showdown. And the king was so egotistical, he thought he and his clerics would prevail. So we went ahead with the debate. This is one of the Achilles' heels of such people. Eliah said, for how much longer will you waver, speaking to Israel? How much longer will you vacillate and fail to engage over these two opposing views? You see, it's religion or relationship. You can't have both. It's God or the adversary. And so Eliah knew that that was the choice. And he asked his people, how long will you continue to live in this middle ground between the two? If Yahweh is God, he said, choose to walk after him. But if the Lord, then make the choice and follow after him. However, the people did not respond or reply to him with a word. They were as comatose and dumbfounded as young people today, incapable of processing what they just heard. So I ask those who favor Judaism, Christianity, and or Islam over Yahweh, what do you call your God? Is it the Lord? Or is it Yahweh? Now, turning a deaf ear to God cannot be resolved, nor can anyone fix stupid. Even when in the presence of one of God's most articulate and brilliant prophets, everyone on this day was dumbfounded. Not a single Jew had the courage or character to stand up for what was right apart from Eliah. And that is Satan's greatest victory. The very reason that he is the author and the advocate of religion. Faith intoxicates the mind and it corrupts the conscience. Often irreversibly paralyzing and incapacitating its victims. Then Eliah said to the people, I am the only remaining prophet of Yahweh, and I am the only one. But the prophets of the Lord are 450 individuals. It's far worse today because there are none. And there hasn't been a prophet speaking for Yahweh for 2,500 years. Over that vast expanse of time, not a single Israelite has been willing to reject religion and politics and listen to God to the extent that Yahweh requires to speak through that individual. As a result, Jews speak for many people, the rabbis, the loudest and shrillest voice among them, but they never speak for God. It's telling that the religious community will continually and universally worship their God as the Lord, but it is even more curious that there are only three ways that the God of the Canaanites, Babylonians, Assyrians, Greeks, Romans, Roman Catholics, and Muslims, and even the Israelites could be addressed in a manner so contrary to Yahweh's nature. And that is by intent and design. If you're calling your God the Lord, you have been played for a fool. Eliyahu's next statement, we find yet another harbinger of what is to come. He said, "We want to offer two fully mature and productive bulls for ourselves, and let them select for themselves a single preferred bull for their test, cut it, and set it on wood planks, but put no fire to it. Then I myself will engage to prepare that which is associated with the one uniquely productive and mature bull, Par Ha Ichad. I will offer him as a gift, over and above the wooden beams, but I will not set fire to him." Well, this, my friends, is a dress rehearsal for when it really matters. He's speaking of what will transpire during the sacrifice of the red heifer, the Adama Parah, the man of the earth, who is productive, on Teruah, just 10 days before Yahweh's arrival with Dod. That is the reason that Eliyahu stated that he wanted two bulls for us. Even Shamanim indicates that this will be repeated a second time. Also, Nathan speaks of a gift, reminding us that Yahweh will offer Yada willingly, giving up his life so that Israel may live. As for Par bull, this variation of bovine was selected for several reasons. First, Yada is an Adam man. It is the blood of a par, that bull, that anoints the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant on Kippurim, allowing the high priest representing Yisrael to approach. Third, par forms the basis of parah, which is to be especially fruitful and productive. It is harmonious with the purpose of the final Zeruah from Zara, meaning one who cultivates the seeds for the final harvest on Shavuah and Teruah. And fourth, with Par, we also see the alternative to Yahweh's advance by Satan, because the bull was the primary symbol of the false god Baal, the Lord, in pagan mythology, particularly in Babylon. As we see, we'll find that events will play out one last time. Yahweh's gift, featured as the Adama Parah, will be counted and countered by the Lord of BS. Even here, by using Kara to summon and invite, to read and recite, to call out and welcome, we are reminded that this will play out on Yahweh's terms and his schedule, with Kara serving as the basis of Mikra, which is the invitations to be called out and meet during the seven Moedim each year. He says, "You will call upon," this is Eliyahu speaking, "to all Yisrael and before the contentious prophets of Baal and Asherah. You will call upon the name of your gods, and I will invite, calling upon the name of Yahweh. Then let it be that the God who answers, responding with fire, well, he is God." And all the people replied, "Well, this statement is a resolution, and it is appropriately stated." Well, goody for you. It is astonishing. But here is an event that is explained in great detail, and yet it could not be enacted today unless it was carried out by Eliyahu again. Why is that? Try to find a Jew in Israel that will even mention Yahweh's name. And that was the central point of his argument. That is why he is being called back to orchestrate, to serve as the master of ceremonies over the sacrifice of the Adama Parah, because there's no one in Israel that's capable of doing it. And on Teruah, since there will be a Lakat gleaning of the Israelites who have accepted the conditions of the covenant on the evening of Teruah, by that following morning, there'll be not a single soul in the remnant of Yisrael who knows Yahweh. So this is a cathartic moment, and it all pivots on a name. The importance of knowing the difference between the Lord and Yahweh. Then Eliah said to the prophets of the Lord, Ha Baal, choose for yourself a single preferred bull for your test. Prepare it first, because you are the more numerous. Call out and summons, making a proclamation in the name of your gods. Just don't set it on fire. Then they called upon the name of the Lord up until midday, when the sun was at its highest point during the day, saying, O Lord, answer us. The reason for this timing is at high noon, the Lord, who was represented by the sun, most certainly should have been able to do his thing. That's when he was at the peak of his performance. But there was no voice, and no one answered. So they vacillated and they wavered over the altar which they had made. You know, it's interesting with the religious. They credit God for their God, their Lord, for everything. You know, if they win the race, it was God's destiny that I prevail. I give God all the credit. If they lose the race, it was God's plan for my life. Well, the same thing is true here. God didn't answer. They had no answer for that. There was no voice, only vacillation. And it came to be at midday, when the sun was at its highest and brightest point, that Eliah mocked and taunted them, pointing out the irony of this, saying, call out in a loud voice for God, because he is meditating. He's maybe preoccupied with his devotional, pondering a frivolous conversation, or perhaps he's having a bowel movement and he's just relieving himself, or rather he's out on a walk. Maybe he's sleeping and needs to be awakened. He was taunting them. It is what I do today to Muslims, and God loves it. Eliah recognized that Baal the Lord was not God and his prophets were frauds. So rather than respect them or even tolerate them in a politically correct or multicultural fashion, he mocked them. And he did so cleverly by pointing out the irony of this situation. At high noon, their God should have been at the peak of his powers, and yet his devotees were getting nothing but sunburn. They continuously called out with a great many voices, and they cut themselves with their blades, as was their way of resolving disputes, using swords and lances, until blood gushed out upon them. It's, again, amazing, and this is prevalent in Judaism, where on the day of reconciliation, Yom Kippur, rather than view it from Yahweh's perspective as a day of reconciliations, when God and Messiah are returning, the great homecoming and family reunion, they look at it as a day of affliction. Of course, they go about afflicting innocent chickens by twirling them over the head, but let's not get into the details. In this case, like Shia Muslims, they thought that the smart play was to cut themselves. If they were bleeding all over themselves, that somehow their God would respect them harming themselves. I mean, who doesn't want a God that thinks it's a interesting and religious sight to see people cutting themselves to shred? Well, blood was gushing out all over the place. And this, too, is prophetic, because the Adama Pera was named the bloody red heifer for a reason. He will be bludgeoned by Hasatan. So rather than accept Yahweh's terms and cut themselves into the covenant, these morons cut themselves out of it, lacerating their bodies in the process, and they were not alone. Self-inflicted wounds have long been part of religion. Christians did it throughout the Middle Ages, and some continue to do it today. I was reading an article that was posted today in one of Israel's most noted periodicals, and it was talking about what transpired in Rome, where the Colosseum in Rome was funded entirely by booty stolen from the temple and from Israel by the conquest of Israel and Jerusalem by Vespasian and his son Titus. And then the slaves who built the Colosseum were almost exclusively Jews. And then when they finished the Colosseum, it was these same Jewish slaves who were murdered for the entertainment of the Romans. There has never been a more despicable empire in human history. And of course, it's the Empire of Rome that became the Roman Catholic Church. It came to be as the sun passed its highest point and its brightest point that they prophesied to lift up the sacrifice. But there was no voice. There was no answer. There was no one paying attention. Elia said to all the people, "Move toward me. Draw a little bit closer." So all the people approached him. Then he repaired and restored the altar to Yahweh, which had been previously destroyed and lay in ruins. And Elia took 12 stones according to the number of tribes of the children of Jacob, because it was unto them that the word of Yahweh had come to exist. He declared Yisrael, individuals who contend against and endure with God, is your name. Then with the stones he rebuilt for the family an altar in the name of Yahweh, and he engaged to fashion a restoring channel to approach the altar suitable to house 2 measures of seed of Zerah. The reason for the mention of the restoring of this altar to Yahweh is that it serves as the place of sacrifice, something that will be necessary for the sacrifice of the red heifer. And the means to approach Yahweh in this manner has been in ruins, eliminated from Judaism, Christianity, and the culture and the traditions of the Jewish people. The 12 tribes were noted that have forgotten, really, the purpose of Teruah's sacrifice. They know nothing of the Adam of Parah, even though it is scribed, filling an entire chapter within the Torah, Numbers 19. And the events which follow on Kippurim to reconcile the 12 tribes with Yahweh is also equally unknown, just as was the existence of this testimony and how it foretells what is soon to occur. Also relevant, Zerah, sowing seeds that restore Israel, is the root, the actionable root, of Zeruah. It describes the purpose and therefore the future of the individual who will cultivate the Shavuah and Teruah harvest, only then to lay down his life to prepare Israel for Yahweh's arrival. He arranged the wood planks and the beams in the proper position such that it was properly prepared and would continue to be of value. Then he divided the mature and productive bull, and he placed him on the wood. And he said with lingering implications, "Fill to the point of overflowing 4 large pitchers or barrels of water and pour out on the uplifting offering as well as on the wood beams." Now, this too was predicting what would occur. The wood beams beneath the red heifer are of cedar, and they are specifically called out in Numbers 19 for Eliyah and Yisrael to know where to place the Adam of Parah. And in the case of the sacrifice of the red heifer, there will also be copious amounts of water. In his case, those waters will emerge from beneath the Temple Mount, and they will cascade off of the Temple Mount and cleanse Yisrael, preparing the remnant of God's people to be seen before their Messiah and King. At the same time, rather than Eliyah igniting the fire, once again, it will be Yahweh. And that fire will not only incinerate those who have come to murder Jews and to steal their land, it will also refine those who are at this moment finally relinquishing their affinity for religion and politics and embracing the God of Yisrael, Yahweh. Well, we have really reached a point where I must pause, and we'll pick up this conversation a week from today. And I hope that our video presentation of this has gone reasonably well so that we will be able to continue. We will also work with StreamYard, which is the source we're using to do this live stream, such that we're able to post it simultaneously, not just on the Craig Wynn Facebook site, but also on X and on YouTube, and then as a upload later on Rumble. So it exists on all of those platforms. We also note that we chose StreamYard for this particular program so that our covenant family, those listening to this program, could interact. Here on Facebook, of course, you can communicate with one another, but StreamYard itself makes a algorithm whereby we can interact with one another during this program. So those are all things we will capitalize going forward. But so that you know, the primary purpose of the video presentations is to draw new listeners, new viewers to the Yadayawa website, where all of the books are presented, where they can read and come to know Yahweh. And for doing that, we will be making presentations that will be polished, if you will, and recorded using Riverside as the principal video blog software. And then we will post those programs, hopefully doing several a day on each of those forums, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, and also X. So this has been our first step in that direction. We hope that it has gone well and that you have enjoyed both being able to listen and to see. I missed the comments in the chat room, but we'll see what we can do to arrange that going forward. And we will end this program at this point so that the length of the program does not overwhelm the channels onto which it's being placed. May Yahweh bless. Have a wonderful Shabbat. Good night.